You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club. Good morning, welcome to the show. It's Thursday the 10th of June, another bright morning, a little more overcast than it has been the last couple of days, but very pleasant as we limber up towards Royal Ascot. And I've been filming in Lambourne this morning with Charlie Hills, whose Batash is on course for the Kingstand Stakes. Of course, he will be one of the headline acts at Royal Ascot next week. He's had a little bit of a problem, he's had a hold up, but he is firing on all cylinders now. We'll be hearing from the trainer very shortly. I'll also be talking to Joseph O'Brien about two horses very much on the comeback trail, Thunder Moon and Pretty Gorgeous, neither of whom have shone thus far this season, but are hoping to recapture the best of their two-year-old form as they head to two of the feature races next week. I'm joined first of all though by Jane Mangan, the RTE and Racing TV broadcaster, and looking through the big feature group ones next week, Jane, the thought occurred to me, as it has to many people, is this the week, Royal Ascot, where, with the assistance of Frankie Dettori, jointly the second most successful Royal Ascot jockey of all time with 73 winners, John Gosden, or John and Thady Gosden, as the licence says now, just roar back to form after a quiet spell?
There doesn't seem to be a three-year-old coming through that'll be emulating the likes of an Enable, but they have the old boys, the consistent class horses like Palace Pier, to start things off in the right tone in the Queen Anne, and then work your way through to Stradivarius in that record attempting, or the record equal attempting, fourth Ascot Gold Cup. But yeah, I think I personally haven't noticed that they've gone anywhere in particular, but when you've had a couple of classics and they haven't been on the board, you're thinking Ascot is the place where they're just going to remind everybody how brilliant they are.
Yeah, it's a big week for them, no doubt about that. Let's talk about the horses in turn. We'll start with Palace Pier, first race of the meeting. This is a horse who, on Thoroughbred Racing Commentary rankings, is the best in the world. Do you believe he deserves that status?
Not particularly. I think you get that status when you beat the best in the world, and I maybe would question whether he has done that to date, but there's no doubt about it that he is going to be unopposable in the Queen Anne. Just looking down through the race order, Australia would have to bounce back. Lopi Fernandez, Lord Glitters, good horses, but this guy is rated 125, and as you say, he's looking like he's two prep runs, or he's won a group one, but his two runs this year have looked as good, if not better, than his three-year-old year, and he's extremely exciting. He's quite lightly raced, there's lots of excitement still about him, and there's no reason to suggest he isn't improving as well, so that's a good one to whet the appetite for the week.
Did you think he added something to his game at Newbury?
To be honest, not really. I always had an awful lot of respect for the horse. I just thought last year that he hadn't beaten the best, and I don't think he's going to be doing it at Ascot either. That's not his fault. They have to line up to take him on. And what is the best miler in Europe to take him on? I'm not sure. So we'll see. He's very exciting and he's very straightforward. And those two things combined with the fact that they have the A-team around him makes him just the class act of the starting point of what could be a great week.
Yeah, Stradivarius, you mentioned everyone's expecting him to win a fourth Gold Cup. Are you?
I think he's going to have a big task ahead of him. He's got Subjectivist is a very, very progressive horse. Spanish Mission should not be underestimated. I think this is a very good race, and I'm not going to dull it down by thinking this is just going to be a turn up and a fourth Ascot Gold Cup. Now, this is going to be a good race. He deserves a favourites tag, but at this stage of his life, he's got some young guns to fend off this year.
So from a punting point of view, is it more the fact that you respect his opponents more this year, or that you think that he might in some way have deteriorated?
He can't be improving at this stage of his life. I just can't see that. Whereas you would think maybe the Mark Johnson horse could be. I'm not saying he's going to ever reach the levels of a Stradivarius, but if you are a punter, you're looking for value, and that means you might be looking elsewhere. Is he going to be in your accumulator? That's the question. Is he going to be in your accumulator, Nick?
I sort of the thing about Stradivarius is throughout his entire career, I've tried to find ways of getting him beaten, and he just gets it done.
You and everybody else.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I remember Santiago in the Goodwood Cup and a litany of other horses that I've tried to get him beaten with. I think Subjectivist might prove one of his sternest foes to date, but the point is, Subjectivist and the way he runs his races ought to set things up for Stradivarius. What Subjectivist can do that other opponents haven't been able to do is run fast internal fractions over a staying trip. And I think, you know, that's why he poses a big threat. But I think given his love of Ascot, given his turn of foot and the way that short straight really suits him and the way Dettori rides him, I think he'll just get the job done one more time. And I think that then might be it.
That might be it. Well, if the ground is lightning quick, like it should be, like the only time when Kew Gardens got the better of him on heavy ground was the only time that really blunted that turn of foot that he has. So he's got that, what very few of those real good stayers have, is that kick. And that's what's made him, that's what set him apart from all the other good stayers. There are horses that get 2.5 miles. There are two like strong stayers in their own bracket. But this guy has just got that class, doesn't he?
Yeah, and no one's forgetting about Stradivarius. He's right up there as a name on everyone's lips just to turn up at Royal Ascot and win his race. Another one who fits that bill is Bat Ash, for all that we haven't seen him so far this season. But I've been filming at Charlie Hills' stable in Lambourne this morning, and I took the time out to ask him how the great horse was getting on.
I've been really pleased with him, Nick. You know, he's been back here now probably 8 weeks, 9 weeks, and he hasn't missed a day. He's looking as the same as what he's been doing in the past, and his work's been very good. So I couldn't be more happy with him, really.
It's been a different regime for him this year, because there's two key people who've been associated with his career since he was a two-year-old who haven't been able to be with him. Just tell me a little bit more.
Yeah, that's right. So Bob, he retired at the end of last year. Which is really sad, but, you know, it was his decision.
And he looked after him since he was here?
He's looked after him, yep, absolutely. But, we got a good replacement in Bluey, who looked after his mother. Mm-hmm. And, they seem to be getting on just fine. And, and poor, you know, Victoria, she who was riding him all last year, she broke her ankle. So we had to obviously get replacements, and Cheryl's taken over, and it seems to be getting on really well with him. And obviously, Dane's still running his work, so nothing's changed. The horse seems very happy in himself, and all systems go.
I mean, calling him the fastest horse in the world always puts a great burden on his shoulders, but he's proven that really is the case. He's absolutely rapid. He's an amazing horse to watch when he's on song. How do you train a horse like that?
Well, he's a pretty easy horse to train now. He knows more about the game than any of us, so. You know, he's in his routine canters, he's very relaxed, switched off, ears pricked. But when you just put another horse with him, he's a completely different kettle of fish. You know, you obviously don't want to have the same horse working with him every week, because there'd be nothing left of that horse. So, you know, we've had to change his work horses quite often this year. But the more work he's got, the less fresh he's become, and he's got more into it. So he should just be peaking right, I think, for next week.
And because he hasn't run this season, people will be trying to get him beaten. How confident are you that you can have him at his very peak first time out?
Well, he did it last year, didn't he? You know, his first run when he went to the King Stand, and he won pretty well there. He's 7 years old now, and he's won first time out every time, so that's not really a problem.
So it's not an issue at all. And in terms of how you assess this year's race, do you see any threats in there that you mightn't have seen before?
Well, you've got to be impressed with Tim Easterby's filly that won at York.
Winter Power.
Winter Power, yeah, absolutely. You know, she looked good that day. She comes there, you know, 3-year-old filly against the older horses. It's never easy, but it can be done. I think Ecriano won as a 3-year-old. But, you know, it's good. And there's two horses coming from America. So, that, you know, we need competition, really. It's all good for racing.
And apart from Bat Ash, which would be your biggest fancy for Royal Ascot?
Well, I mean, I'm quite keen on a horse called Equality, really.
This is the one you're not supposed to tell anyone about.
Sorry. No, but I mean, obviously, you know, Miss Desabek, he runs in the Jersey, he's going to have a great, great chance.
Well, you say Miss Desabek, but you've already let the cat out of the bag. Equality, you run in the Palace of Holyrood House. Why do you like him so much?
He's just very professional, got a lot of speed, just like his dad, Ecriano. And, you know, he's obviously pretty inexperienced going into a race like this, but hopefully he'll overcome that.
Charlie, best of luck next week.
Yeah, thanks very much, Nick.
So Charlie Hill's quite rightly pointing out to me there that Battash has won every season first time out that he's been racing. Well, he's won most of his races. Is there any reason, Jane, why he shouldn't just turn up and win the King's Stand?
I don't see it. He's an incredible horse, has always been that bullet that you love in the King's Stand. I don't see a horse to get past him. And it's great to have him back. It's been almost 300 days since he beat Kiyomoro at York. He obviously has had a little setback, but he is the class act of the race, and it's very difficult to look past.
Battash this time faces a very smart filly, as Charlie was saying. He clearly respects winter power enormously, and he has to consider the age allowance and the gender allowance. But I don't know. Again, if he's anything like his best, he ought to blow these apart.
Yeah, look, he's obviously the overseas runners add another level of intrigue as well. Extravagant Kid for Brendan Walsh, yeah, and Ryan is obviously booked as well. So he's an 8-year-old. Is he going to be good enough to beat Battash? You'd be maybe a little bit surprised. Maven in there, the American Pharaoh, 4-year-old for Wesley Ward. So they add another level of intrigue. Liberty Beach, a winner last time for John Quinn as well. But they're all going to have to put up a career best, I'd say, to beat Battash. And look, it is his seasonal debut, but he's just that bullet, isn't he? He's everything you want in a sprinter, and I'm not going to give any insight as how he's going to get beaten.
I mean, given how well this stable does with very fast horses, I was pretty taken with Charlie's enthusiasm for Equality, a horse I must confess I didn't know an awful lot about, running in the Palace of Holyrood House off a mark of 88.
Yeah, I can't give you any insight into that either. The handicaps at Ascot, I'm only just getting to digest them now. When you read the front page of the Racing Post and see Willie Mullins and what he's bringing over for the Queens, for the Ascot Stakes, etc., that's kind of only whetting my appetite for the handicaps at Ascot, to be honest.
Okay, so which one do you like of the Willie Mullins group?
Sure, you have to. The class horses, Saldier, seeing it. I know it was a much lower grade race at Listowel last time. He just literally proved that he's alive and did a piece of work. But you have to respect that Willie Mullins' record at Ascot is extraordinary. 4 Ascot Stakes, a pair of Queen Alexandras, and then, of course, Simenon, who did the double back in 2012. And he suggested that in the same ownership, or in the Rich Ritchie ownership, that Saldier will probably try to emulate the Simenon's exploits. So he is the Morgiana hurdle winner. He's a 4-year-old grade 1 hurdle winner. And he's potentially the class act amongst Rayapur, MC Muldoon, Royal Illusion and Stratum.
I always, one of the things I enjoy most about broadcasting Royal Ascot to an American audience is that a horse can run over 2.5 miles on Tuesday and then wheel out again over 2.75 miles on Saturday and just occasionally can win both races. It is a real head scrambler, that, isn't it?
Yeah, well, actually, listening to Mark Johnson on your program on Sunday, look, on Sunday, sometimes we overcomplicate things, and the simplicity of having a fit and healthy horse means so much. And Willie Mullins has done that. We see him before Cheltenham every year. Madness to bring this podcast about Royal Ascot back to Cheltenham, but he gives a horse an entry in the Champion Hurdle, the World Hurdle, the Champion Chase and the Gold Cup, and then just fits them in because they're so talented, they're so fit and they're so healthy, and it works.
Yeah, and it could work for him again at Royal Ascot next week, a meeting where he's got an enviable record. Another man who will be looking to wheel horses back and get them back into form is Joseph O'Brien, his 2 stable stars. It hasn't been their year yet, Thunder Moon and Pretty Gorgeous, but they were very good 2-year-olds, and I started off by talking about the colt, who runs in the St. James's Palace.
Yeah, both in good shape, Nick. Thunder Moon obviously disappointed in Newmarket. So, you know, we put a line through that run, and we had an iron the Irish guineas, but when the ground looked like it was going to be soft, which it was, we rerouted to come here, and his preparation has gone well.
I mean, Newmarket looked like a complete blowout. Did anything come to light?
Not particularly, other than the fact that he got very upset pre-race. We didn't have much of an excuse. He came home well, and he's been healthy and well since. So, you know, unfortunately, these things do happen. So, yeah, we just put a line through the run, regrouped, and we've trained them for here, and his preparation has gone smoothly.
I mean, is there any possibility that he might not have trained on, or do you think he's as good as he was?
Well, I guess, Nick, you know, there's always the possibility, but you know, his work has been nice at home. He's always been a good kind of a sharp worker, and his work has been good in preparation for this race. So, but you know, you never know until they do it on the track, and that's where it matters.
Do you like the idea of that round mile for him?
Yeah, I think it's a suitable a race. It's a relatively easy mile. You know, compared to a Curragh mile, it certainly is easier than that. And so it looks a good race for him. It looks a good race. Obviously, it's going to be, but I think he goes there with an outside chance. Certainly a good chance if he can get back to his best form.
I can't wait to see Pretty Gorgeous again, Joseph. How's she done?
Yeah, she's done really well, Nick. You know, it was well done. Commented that we didn't have the smoothest of runs with her, but I was really pleased with her comeback run in the Curragh, and this has been the plan since then, and I'm excited to get her out again.
I mean, it looks as though the ground is going to be very much on top next week. I mean, are you convinced in your own mind that's what she wants?
No, I think probably her optimum ground is good or slightly easier than good, but she's proven effective on all surfaces. She's ran on quite firm ground and performed well, and she's obviously performed on softer ground as well. So, exactly. I'm happy enough with the ground for her.
And again, it looks a nice race, but she has got the best 2-year-old form. As I said, we do forget things quite quickly in this game. How do you feel about your whole team going into Royal Ascot?
Yeah, I feel good. I think we have some nice chances. I don't think we have an outstanding chance. Probably Pretty Gorgeous is probably our best chance going over there. But we think we'll be well represented, and we have some handicappers and horses in the group races through the week. So I'd be very pleased if we can get one on the board.
Joseph, thanks so much for talking to me.
Thanks, Nick.
Yeah, big week, Jane, for Joseph with these two horses. They sort of need to strut their stuff, really, don't they? To uphold their brilliant reputations as 2-year-olds.
Yeah, it happens to many horses. Group one winning juveniles, can they translate the form? And to be fair, I think everybody can appreciate Thunder Moon's run in Newmarket was not nearly what was expected. He was strong in the market. He was well touted pre-race, and he was beaten coming out of the stalls very early on. Had you supported him, you knew your fate. So there is no doubt better than that performance, and I hope he can show that on quick ground at Ascot. And Pretty Gorgeous, she obviously missed the guineas for a reason, and when she turned up at the Curragh, it was a lackluster performance behind Empress Josephine. There's no doubt about that. She finished midfield of 14 runners. On her preferred going, people thought that the heavy going at the Curragh would suit her. So it would be interesting to see if she can adapt to Ascot, because when she won and beat Indigo Girl in the Filly's Mile last year, Newmarket, she obviously won on soft, and she's quite a big, robust filly. So I think they will look at what is her best piece of form on good ground. She was second to Shailen the Moigler. That type of form to be translated to the Coronation, she'd have to, again, put up a career best. But they're capable of being competitive in group one level as 3-year-olds. I don't have any doubt about that. And the filly in particular, Pretty Gorgeous, was expected to improve from 2 to 3 because of the physical nature of the filly. She's quite a big, robust filly. You wouldn't have expected her to be at her best as a 2-year-old.
Now, Jane, what have you been up to this week?
I have been in Kildare paddocks for the Goff's Land Rover sale, and I can only tell you that it was a joy. The atmosphere was very pleasant. It was the first sale held in Ireland in 2021, and the market was vibrant, to say the least. There was 401 lots offered. 353 of them found new homes. That's an 88% clearance rate, which is pretty brilliant. The average was over 46,000 euro, which is up 10% on last year. And what was really lovely to see was a number of poignant UK purchasers coming over, lots of UK trainers restocking to be competitive next year. And the top purchaser, unsurprisingly, was High Flyer. He signed the Minton Bromley Alliance, signed for 40 horses and over €2 million. And that's the difference between having them at the sale and not. I know the online option is a positive, but there's no substitute for being there in the flesh, and it was a booming market and a real positive sign, and something we expected off the back of Doncaster. Doncaster was very strong, and hopefully that'll roll on into the Tattersalls Derby sale in 2 weeks' time.
Jane, you and I haven't spoken since the news of the Stephen Mahon ban, which we have talked about quite a bit on this podcast. It's sort of received wisdom being that 4 years was quite a lenient punishment for the offences that he was charged with, several cases of neglect. He's announced his intention to appeal. Richard Forrestal has written a hard-hitting piece in the Racing Post this morning suggesting that the ban should have been harsher. Is that a view that's reflected throughout Irish horse racing, do you think?
Yeah, I can only speak for myself, but you listen to the vibes and the thoughts of others, and it just seems, for somebody who had a suspension back in 2008 for a horse who was seriously neglected, that a repeat case involving 10 horses resulting in 4 years, with him being allowed to work within the sport or within the industry, just doesn't seem right. It seems lenient, and it's so disappointing and so frustrating. We've been on this podcast before discussing different types of negligence and sanctions, and this is the worst of all, and it just doesn't seem right.
Well, a few moments ago, Jane was talking about her very pleasant and positive experiences this week at the Goffs Land Rover sale. If you listen very carefully, you can hear the second part of it going on in the background, because I'm joined by Goffs director and auctioneer Nick Nugent now. Nick, it sounds as though they've been flying away this week and doing incredibly well.
Yeah, it's been a really good sale, Nick. We've been, it's been very uplifting, because like everybody in the world, the last 18 months or whatever have been very challenging. And so we've had a live sale back in Ireland. We've had a lot of visitors from the UK, and it's been a very successful sale. We increased the size of the sale, but we managed to rise the average price as well. And it was close enough to a median price, which suggests that, you know, a lot of people sold their horses well, and hopefully they'll go on and become high-class racehorses to add to the roll of honour that we've been fortunate enough to sell in the past.
Yes, the notion that UK trainers would simply be steamrolled by the Irish into submission seems to have not been borne out this week.
No, well, there's definitely been sort of signs that there's a fight back underway, and David Minton and Anthony Bromley and Tessa Greatrix of Highflyer Bloodstock, who are the kind of number one players in the numerical market, you know, they have been very dominant. Tom Malone's been buying for Paul Nichols, Aidan Murphy's been, you know, it's been great to see Matt Coleman's been here with the John Joe O'Neill team. So there's been some very, very important purchasing going on by the UK stables. And actually, it's important that that proves successful for them on the race course.
So buoyed by that, you move on to what is one of your most interesting sales of the year, and certainly one of the more different thoroughbred auctions anywhere in the world. Tell me a little bit about the Goffs London sale.
Well, the Goffs London sale has been going for a few years now. We have, on the eve of Royal Ascot, on the Monday evening, we have rented a location in Hyde Park. Initially it was the Orangery, and more recently the field at the northwest corner of Hyde Park, known as Perks Field, where we have basically constructed a bloodstock sale on the evening before Royal Ascot, to which the great and good of Global Bloodstock, who tend to assemble in London for Ascot in a way that no other racing event has people there, we've invited them there, and we've sold horses in absentia, many of whom are going to go on and run at Royal Ascot. Others might make high-class international racing prospects. We call it a sale like no other. We do it in partnership with some supporting partners. We did it with Kipco. We've done it with Selfridges have been a very big part of it. The famous London store, Chateau Leyoub, which is a superb Provence vineyard, have been involved. It's been great. It's been a great hospitality and commercial event. So we couldn't do it last year, obviously, so we suspended it, and we felt that it wasn't appropriate to have a sale when a lot of two-year-old breeze-up horses still hadn't got to the market. But this year we're doing a slightly different one. We decided to reintroduce it and have something taking place on Monday, and we are doing the London sale online, and hopefully in a way like no other online sale.
Mm-hmm. So this will be, a 10 or a dozen lots all bound for Royal Ascot?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that they mainly have Royal Ascot entries, but they don't necessarily, they're not under an obligation to, you know, the new owners might decide not to run them there. We will have I think we've got 10 entries at the moment. It's two or three wildcards that are running, actually. There's a horse running today and a couple at the weekend that might be added. They'll be added without, I imagine, Royal Ascot entries, but might be of international racing prospects. So we're going to do it online. We're going to start the sale at about 1 o'clock on Monday, so it actually works through people's lunchtime. We're going to start a preview show with all the horses in it at 12:45, and it'll be broadcast on the Goff's website. And we're looking forward to do it. We've four horses from Ireland, we've a horse from France, and the rest are training in the UK. But they're horses that have caught the eye, and they're with leading trainers. You know, they're with Hugo Palmer or Rafe Beckett or John Quinn or Joseph O'Brien and Carl Burke or Richard Fahey. Horses that are, you know, are worthy of inclusion in the sale, and hopefully will catch the eye of buyers. These horses all have video footage, pre-vettings, and we're hopeful we'll be able to stimulate some interest.
Well, thanks to all my guests this morning. Jane is still with me and is going to send you home with a winner.
Well, I'm going to go to Leopardstown, and Monasib is probably the most interesting runner across either of the Irish Sea today, either side, because Monasib, second to high definition in the Beresford, third to Poetic Flair in a Guineas trial, drops back down to 6 furlongs with advice on for the first time in the Ballycore Stakes at 5:50 at Leopardstown. Watch out for him. He was a no-show in the Irish Guineas last time, but dropping back down in trip could be interesting to see how Monasib gets on.
And all three tips have won this week, from Lee Mottershead, Lydia Hislop and David Yates. So no pressure, Jane.
Thank you for telling me that after I said it.
That was Thursday the 10th of June. We will see you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.